But you also look at the civil rights movement and you see that it wasn't just one person or one action or one idea. It was lunch counter protest. It was the Selma to Montgomery marches. It was the bus boycotts. It was all of these things that sort of coalesced into what we know as the movement. And that has to be sort of the model that we look at today, where it can't just be one person saying, oh, do this, do that. It has to be different people participating in different actions all over the place.
Hello, this is the Great Battlefield Podcast. I'm Nathaniel G. Perlman. A great political battle is being fought right now between progressives and the forces of reaction on the other side. This show is about the political entrepreneurs and other progressive leaders who are finding new or improved ways to fight. If you consult Wikipedia, you will find that Katie Ader is a 19-year-old activist and social entrepreneur who founded and has led three social impact ventures already, 50 Miles More, Kids Tales, and the Future Coalition, where she's currently the executive director. I wanted to talk to Katie because her current enterprise, the Future Coalition, seems like a very good idea, helping coordinate and assist a whole bunch of youth-led social change organizations and initiatives. At 19, Katie's well ahead of the normal curve on having public impact. We had a very good conversation about her history, the Future Coalition, what it does, and her work in starting it, and such matters as ego and celebrity in organizing and social movements. So with that as background, a quick word from our sponsor, then my interview with Katie Ader at the Future Coalition.
Check out the large, detailed, and high-quality political data graphic posters from Timeplots. Our visual history of the American presidency, for example, lets you see the Clinton, Bush, Obama, and Trump presidencies in full context. Timeplots library includes visual histories of the United States House, the United States Senate, the Supreme Court, and the Democratic and Republican parties. Find them all at www.timeplots.com. Use the code BATTLEFIELD for a discount.
Would you mind introducing yourself and giving me a quick biography?
Yes, my name is Katie Ader. I'm 19 years old. I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, but I'm currently living in Los Angeles, and I am the executive director of the Future Coalition. And the Future Coalition is a network and community for youth-led organizations and youth leaders across the United States.
You're 19 and you're the executive director of a Future Coalition. That's pretty good for a start of a career, I think. What does that mean, network and community?
Kind of back in June of 2018, a few leaders in the youth space across the country came together and we started talking about the kind of greater youth movement and sort of what we noticed and what we liked and what we didn't like. And we saw pretty quickly that there was a gap in the youth space where there were all these really amazing organizations doing all this really great work, but nobody was really talking to each other and nobody was really collaborating, which was preventing us from making the biggest impact possible. And so we decided to create the Future Coalition to really have a space where young people and young leaders across the country could come together and work together and really support each other and find resources to help grow their impact. Network kind of means, you know, that we're really trying to bridge those gaps between people who are working on different issue areas or working in different geographical locations. And then community, just really focusing on how can we support each other as not just kind of youth organizers and youth activists, but really as people and as individuals and sort of as friends kind of in the greater space and sort of living similar experiences.
And how do you become the one that's the executive director?
So I happened to be a senior in high school last year and knew that I wanted to take a gap year. And so sort of had the time and sort of flexibility in like that year taking off from school to help lead this. But it is definitely not just me. And there are so many young people on our team and just across the country who are really putting their energy and time and passion into building this. So yeah, I just happen to have more time than other people who are in school, but it is certainly not just me. It's lots of folks all over.
Just out of curiosity, when you took this gap year, had you already applied and got into school, or where are you in the whole college process?
Yes. So I got accepted to Stanford University last year, like in the admissions process, and knew that I wanted to take a gap year. One of my older sisters did. I thought I wanted to go learn Spanish, but turns out I'm staying here and helping build the Future Coalition. So I actually have deferred now a second year. So I will start Stanford in the fall of 2020.
What are you going to study when you get there?
I'm not quite sure yet. I think probably either sociology or some sort of political science. If I could sort of design a dream major, I would want to look at kind of the history of social movements and how change is brought about and sort of look at the human ego and how that affects how we think about change and how we develop theories around how change is made. But because that's not a major, probably sociology and political science are some mix of that.
Well, how do you think that the ego fits into the whole change question?
And I think especially in sort of the 21st century kind of activism world, that there's a certain tendency for the media to want to create figureheads or kind of celebrity activists out of social movements, where, you know, in the truth of the matter is that social movements are most effective and I think most impactful when it's brought by the grassroots and it's by people everywhere, you know, doing work locally and on the statewide level and on the national level. And I think it's true about the movements that we see. And I think especially in the youth movement, when looking at, you know, either the gun violence prevention movement or the kind of the climate movement that's now building, is it's the same way where there are kids everywhere who care about this issue and care about making a change. But when the media turns it into a story about a single individual, that people, especially young people who are sort of just getting involved, sort of see that as the success. And in order to be successful in the space, in order to achieve success, you have to, you know, have a lot of followers on social media, or you have to be in the news a lot. And that's really detrimental to the work that's happening locally and kind of that really important grassroots action. When looking and having conversations with people in the space, as soon as people become aware that that's a factor and are able to sort of articulate it, it really does shift the ability to create impact, because people want to work with everyone. They want to be part of something bigger than themselves. And it's sort of creating that narrative of, you know, it's not just one person or one leader, but it's we're part of a team and we're part of something larger than just us, and sort of switching that narrative. Ego has a role, and obviously leaders of social movements has a role. We look at, you know, the civil rights movement and Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and people that really arose as leaders. But you also look at the civil rights movement and you see that, you know, it wasn't just one person or one action or one idea. It was lunch counter protest. It was the Selma to Montgomery marches. It was the bus boycotts. It was all of these things that sort of coalesced into what we know as the movement. And that has to be sort of the model that we look at today, where it can't just be one person saying, oh, do this, do that. It has to be different people participating in different actions all over the place.
You got going pretty early in your life, even earlier than now, in starting a nonprofit. What was your first step, and why did you do it?
My fourth grade gym class, my gym teacher would separate the boys and the girls when we played games like soccer or basketball or whatever it may be, and made the girls play with the girls and the boys play with the boys. And that really frustrated me, because I think that, you know, the boys always seemed like they were having more fun. And so I convinced my class to stage a sit-in in our gym class and create a petition until all the boys and the girls could play together. And that was kind of my first introduction into seeing how one person and their actions could create change. And, you know, my gym teacher eventually gave in and let us all play together. And from that point on, I sort of understood, oh, you know, if we see a problem and we try to fix it, that, you know, we can fix it. Going through elementary school, I got very interested in the environment and environmental activism and really wanted to do that for a while, and did that for a bit. And then kind of landed in seventh and eighth grade. I was a really, really big writer and loved writing, and decided, after sort of seeing that a lot of my friends and kids in my classes saw writing as something really negative, decided that I wanted to create an organization called Kids Tales. Well, I didn't start with wanting to create an organization. I started with wanting to teach a creative writing workshop just to introduce kids to writing, and loved it, and decided I wanted to grow it. And so created Kids Tales, which was a nonprofit, or is a nonprofit, that empowers kids to find their voice using creative writing. And so spent eighth grade into my senior year of high school working on that. And now it's continuing. Just I have a less involved role now. But yeah, that was sort of how I started in kind of the nonprofit space.
It's obviously not every fourth grader who's heard of a sit-in or has the impulse to stage one about, I don't know, gender equality in gym. What were your parents like, or where was that coming from, the knowledge and the interest in that kind of change?
So I grew up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and I grew up very involved in the Jewish community. That was a really, really big part of how I was raised and the values that I sort of gained from living in that community. And in Judaism, there is something called Tikkun Olam, which basically means to repair the world. And the idea behind it is that, you know, as human beings, we have the responsibility to other human beings when we see a problem to try to help fix it. Even before learning the phrase Tikkun Olam, or even before being able to connect that phrase to kind of the work that I was doing or what I was passionate about, I think I really understood that, you know, that value and that the importance of really living that value. And so I think that kind of without realizing it, without knowing it, was really weaved into what I believe and kind of what drives me. And so I would say that that is probably a really big contributor to the passions I have now and what I'm choosing to do with my life right now.
How did your peers respond to your activism?
At first, it was much more challenging. When I started in eighth grade, most of the kids in my school and in my classes, my friends, you know, they were doing the school musical, they were in school sports, and it was something that was seen as very against the status quo. And I think at first I was really excited about it, and I was really excited to get my, you know, peers involved and my friends involved. And I remember, you know, kind of the day that Kids Tale started becoming what it is and started forming. I remember going to school and telling all my friends about it and being so excited and wanting them to all get involved and wanting them to all teach with me and just being really enthusiastic about it. And coming back to school the next day and sitting down at my lunch table and with all my friends, and one of my friends slid a piece of paper toward me and I turned it over and they had photoshopped a flyer, something like Kids Read or something. Basically, the flyer was like, come teach kids to read over the summer and it will help you get into college and kiss up to teachers or something like that. And I looked up and all my friends were laughing at me. And I realized that to them, it wasn't something cool. It wasn't something, you know, exciting. It was something that was against the status quo. And it was something that, you know, I was doing not because I wanted to, but because I was doing it to get into a good school or kiss up to teachers or whatever. And I think in that moment, I really realized that this was something that I wasn't going to be able to share with the kids in my classes and my friends. And it was something that I sort of had to keep to just myself. And so for the next then, I think really 3.5 years until I really got, I think, into the second semester of my senior year, I didn't. I lived sort of a completely double life where, like, in school, I was doing all the normal school things with all my friends and all of that. But then after school on the weekends, I was doing this work and really involved in doing that. And it was really hard. And I think that it wasn't until kind of after, and even now that I look back, that I totally understand how isolating that became and how being alone in what you're doing and not having a support system of, you know, the kids around you is really, really difficult. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm so passionate about building the Future Coalition, because I think that no kid should ever have to feel that way. And if you have a passion or you have something that you care about, that you have a community that supports you and a community that invests in you. And even if that's not your community, that's your neighbors or your friends or the kids in your at your school, that, you know, you have that somewhere, because I think it's really important to feeling that you can make change and feeling like you can continue doing that and not burning out.
What was your true motivation for doing Kids Tales? What really drove you?
Even before I reached middle school and before Kids Tales, writing was something that was a really, really big piece of my life. And it was, you know, something that I was a very quirky kid. You know, I was the kind of kid that wore different costumes to school every day to like the sixth grade and was sort of dorky in that way. And writing really gave me an outlet to articulate myself and I think really to have a voice in a way that I wasn't able to before that, and really feeling like I had ownership over something that I was doing and something that I was creating. And so going into middle school and seeing that so many of my peers had such a negative feeling toward writing, and that it was something that, you know, we had to do in school because we had to write essays and we had to write book reports. And I felt a determination to make people see writing the way that I saw it. I tried to find a place where I could teach creative writing, and there was nothing that I then as a 13-year-old could teach. And so I decided that I wanted to just run my own workshop at a summer camp near my house and sort of started that way. And I didn't have any, you know, goal or dream of it getting any bigger than just that one class. And then after the end of that very first class, there was a girl in that workshop named Alana, who throughout the week had been really, really shy, hadn't said much. And then at the end of that very first class, she called me over to her table and she started telling me about her life and started explaining that her parents were divorced and she was constantly shuffled back and forth between their houses. And she never felt like she had a chance to express herself. But that writing and that Kids Tales was the first time she felt like she had a voice. And she used that. She said had a voice, and it articulated in that moment, kind of articulated for me what writing had done for myself. And then also, I think it really showed me the potential that this could do for other young people and other kids around the country and the world. And it was sort of that moment that I decided, okay, yes, this has to grow. And I think throughout all of those years going through high school and doing much of the work feeling very isolated from my peers, I think that that is what continued going, and that and stories like that where kids started to see writing as I did and started to love it in the way that I loved it. That was my motivation and continues to be in that how important I think it is, because I really do think that every young person deserves a chance to tell their story and deserves a chance to find a voice in whatever way that may be. That continues to drive me, and I think the work that I do now as well.
What have you written and are you still writing?
Yes, my writing has definitely changed. When I was younger, I wrote a lot of short stories and a lot of longer stories, but a lot of fiction. And then I went through kind of a spoken word phase as well through high school. I don't write as much creatively anymore. I do journal as much as I can. I try to, sometimes I do write creatively, but just because of time, unfortunately, I don't as much anymore, even though I should. But I do a lot of writing for my work and a lot of writing, about the work that I'm doing, which doing so much creative writing has really helped me be able to kind of tell a story and sort of appeal to people through story, because I think that's a really powerful way to sort of get your point across. Even though I don't write as much fiction anymore, that it's still a pretty big part of my day-to-day life.
What did Kids Tales turn into? Like, how widespread did it become and what kind of organization is it?
It started as one workshop in Milwaukee in the summer of 2014, I believe. It grew over the course of those 5 years into having workshops in over 12 cities in the U.S. and 9 countries, which was really exciting. And we found a real niche in the kids that go through writing, or Kids Tales. We describe them as kids that wouldn't have writing experiences outside of school otherwise. And we found that that was especially impactful for kids in juvenile detention centers and kids in refugee camps. And then kids living in low-income communities, not just within the U.S., but abroad as well. And that kids abroad, especially in a lot of countries, we did a lot of work in Brazil and still do have a really strong chapter there. And a lot of kids there really truly do not have any opportunities a lot of times to sort of get out of the situations that they're in if they're born into a family or community with a lack of resources. And that we've seen Kids Tales being extremely impactful and powerful in those communities, which has been really awesome to watch.
That is pretty cool. You've had now some experience with your own activism and then obviously through Future Coalition and starting that with others. Do you think that activists are different? Is there a gene for this? Where is this coming from?
I think organizer or activist or whatever you call it, change maker too is another one. But I think it's a lot about how you're living your life and less about sort of what you're calling it. Because I think organizer, activist, change maker, all of those things exist in more places than we think they do. We just, don't label them as such because they aren't labeled as that by other people. Anyone that sees an issue and decides that they want to do something about it, that they could claim one of those words or they could be described using one of those terms. And I don't think that there's any gene or there's any, thing that makes someone who is, leading a rally or organizing a walkout or putting together a lobbying day, there's no difference between those people and anyone else. I think it's just they decide that they see a problem and they want to do something about it. And anyone can do that. And I truly believe that because I've seen it happen over and over where people who have said, I don't have the skills, I don't have the knowledge, I don't have the time or the resources to do something about this. And then they do, and they figure out how, and they find the resources either through Future Coalition or through someone else, and they find that support system and they're able to create that change. So I really think anyone can be a change maker. Anyone can be an organizer. Anyone can be an activist. And all it takes is seeing a problem and saying, I want to do something to fix that.
I think that probably anyone can be. Not everyone chooses to be. And one thing I've noticed, even observing small children, is that some seem to have a real problem with injustice, and it seems to irk some kids more than others. And maybe that's linked. You know, it's always impressive to see people who operationalize that, I guess. Is there something that you read or multiple things that you've read that impacted you a lot? And you clearly have an awareness of earlier social movements.
I'm a big advocate for learning as much as you can from others and from other movements, because a lot is the same, even if it's a different issue, it's the same fight, and there's a lot that can be learned. So the civil rights movement is a really big inspiration for me, kind of how I got started with the Future Coalition and first got involved in the gun violence prevention movement is after March for Our Lives ended last year in 2018, a few students from my high school and myself and other students from around Wisconsin organized a 50-mile march from our capital to Paul Ryan's hometown to call him out directly for his role in blocking and banning gun legislation. And we called it 50 Miles More. And we came up with that name not just because, you know, it was 50 miles more from that March for Our Lives day. And we were walking 50 miles more to sort of signify that that fight was going to continue. But it also was 50 miles more in memory and paying tribute to the 50 more mile marches that happened from Selma to Montgomery during the civil rights movement. Learning all about those marches and sort of how it was planned and what happened and how they sort of gained support was really important in how we structured and developed our march last year. And what we forget about the civil rights movement is that the leaders at the time of the civil rights movement were all young people. And you can see that in the United States with the civil rights movement, but also in other countries with when there's large social movements and when there is a point in time where change is, you know, there's a catalyst that brings about change. A lot of times it comes from young people. And so that also is really fascinating to me. The civil rights movement is one of my really, really big inspirations in learning about the tactics that they used and the kind of intricacy of the movement that, you know, when we learn about in history class, we don't learn about SNCC, which was the training school that a lot of the civil rights activists went through. And we don't learn that, you know, there was all this stuff happening in the background besides just Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech. And all of those things, all of those pieces, that's what, you know, we're living and we're going through now with the gun violence prevention movement, with the climate change movement, you know, with the youth movement as a whole. We're living those intricacies, and to see and to go back and to do more research in depth into what existed during the civil rights movement, what existed during the Serbian revolution, Otpor, the resistance group that happened in Serbia, those young people and their fight and kind of the details behind that, learning about that, I think is so helpful. So when something comes up in our movement and in our space, we can say, oh, you know what? This isn't the first time this happened. This happened a few decades ago, and this is what they did, and this is what we can do now. And that is, I think, extremely helpful in kind of being purposeful and meaningful in the work that we're doing and the choices that we decide to make.
I think there's a lot of high school students who would sort of vaguely like to make the world a better place, but don't know how to find a way into that. What advice would you give to such a person about what opportunities there are to join up and make a difference in one of these movements?
I would say the first place to start is a lot of cities and a lot of regions have things like, you know, a March for Our Lives chapter or a Sunrise chapter or Zero Hour if you're looking in the climate space. And they have these sort of youth-led chapters already. And that's a really great way to engage. But I also think it's really important to realize and recognize that there are a lot of cities or a lot of places that don't have them, whether it's because, you know, they're a small town, whether it's that they're, you know, really rural, whether other people in their family or their town don't support it. All of those things go into, I think, preventing young people from being able to take action. In that case, I think if you have the support and you have the resources to be able to start something on your own, a lot of organizations make it really easy. And you can check out, if you go to our website, futurecoalition.org, there's all of our partners, or all of our our member organizations are there, and links to their websites, and getting engaged in that work and starting chapters is another thing that you can do. But then if you, you know, feel like you don't have that support or those resources to start something on your own, and there isn't something to engage with within your town, that can be really difficult. And so connecting with organizations doing work at a national level and being able to work remotely and support work remotely is also a very legitimate option for people. And you can learn about that through Future Coalition. And that's sort of the work that we're trying to do, is sort of connecting young people to those opportunities. It's starting with something small and starting with something manageable and in your own community. And like I said earlier, you know, an organizer, an activist, a change maker, it doesn't have to be somebody who, you know, is giving big speeches at big marches. It's just someone who sees a problem in their community, in their school, in their family, and they say, you know, I want to do something to make this better. I want to do something to fix this. And that's, you know, the first thing, the first step is saying, you have the power, you have the ability to make a difference on this issue. And then once you have that and you have that belief in yourself, it's about creating a vision. What do you want to see? That's what change do you want to make? It's finding at least one person to support you, you know, one or two people, whether it's in your family, whether it's at your school, a teacher, or whether it's online, you know, a few people to support you, and then making a plan and figuring out, you know, how do you, what steps do you need to take to get to that vision? And then just starting, I think, you know, is the best way to do it, is just, you know, take one step and then take another and then another. And soon enough, you'll find yourself making change.
Let's talk a little bit about Future Coalition, which you've, you know, referred to throughout. But what is the sort of nitty-gritty of getting that started and finding partners and organizing it and funding it and staffing it and all of those things leading it? What's been going on and how is it all shaped up?
So when we first started the Future Coalition back in June, when we started pitching the idea to various leaders of youth-led organizations, we very quickly realized that the idea of a coalition in the youth space, because it had never existed before, was so abstract to people that they didn't really know how to respond to the idea. People didn't really quite understand how they were going to collaborate with people who were working on different issue areas in them or who were living in different geographical areas than they were. And so we knew we needed to create something that all of these groups could come together and work on with one another, and it could all come from all of them. And so we created Waka to Vote, which was our launching campaign. As a coalition, the 20 founding members asked high school and college students to walk out of class on election day and march to the polls to cheer each other on as those eligible cast their vote. That campaign was extremely successful in that externally, we had over 500 walkouts across the country and the youth vote was historic. But I think for us, the real success came in what happened internally, in that, you know, it really did provide the space for all these different leaders, all these different groups to come together, to work together, to support each other. And people really had fun. People, that was really exciting to people. And after the elections were done, you know, we immediately got questions of, oh, what's next? Or, you know, how are we going to continue doing this? And all of that. And so Future Coalition as a team, we knew, okay, this is going to be something. This can be something. And we need to figure out what it's actually going to look like. What we ended up doing right after the election is spending 2 months basically just having conversations with the leaders of all of our member organizations and other youth leaders across the country to really understand what the experience of various youth organizers and youth activists are, and what are the challenges they're facing, what is the support that they need, and how best can we provide that support. And so from those conversations, we really started to understand the largest gap areas in the experience of a young, you know, leader in this country, and have designed what is, you know, the programmatic side of Future Coalition around what the needs that people expressed were, to really make sure that we were actually providing something that was helpful to people and not just something that we thought was helpful. Our programmatic work is divided into three pillars. So the first is building community and really focusing on, you know, how can we make sure that, as I said earlier, you know, no young person has to feel isolated in the work that they're doing. And so really kind of being purposeful about developing those, not just professional collaborative relationships, but also, you know, those personal relationships and those friendships, and kind of building support systems for people within the space. So that's the first pillar. And the second pillar is supporting initiatives and ideas that young people have, both through our Future Accelerated program, which is basically an in-kind program where we have a whole bunch of adults who are amazing and want to give their services pro bono to young people doing really innovative change-making work. We match young people with a need, like like building a website, like doing data analysis, like graphic design with an adult who has those expertise and is willing to help. Also in that pillar is our Future Foundation program, which we are developing and really working on raising monetary funds and money to grant out to young people doing work. So, you know, money is never a factor in if a young person can take an idea and turn it into change, which is really important to us. And then the third pillar is Future U, Future University, which is the activism and organizing school that we're designing to model after SNCC, which I mentioned earlier, which was the civil rights activism and organizing school used during the civil rights movement, but really to focus on how can we fill the gap that sometimes exists because young people don't have all that organizing experience, and really making sure that, you know, young people have the skills and the tools and the knowledge they need to take whatever idea they have and really kind of create around it and to watch it actually make change. So that's kind of how our day-to-day is. Our number one goal is really, you know, how can we build the capacity of young people, and how can we make sure that any young person anywhere, if they have an idea or they have, you know, something that they want to change, that they're supported in doing it, they're invested, they feel like they're invested, and they are, and they have the resources to do it. And then they have the people behind them, and they have the support system to feel like, you know, they have people who are cheering them on and who are there when things get challenging. So it's really about, you know, strengthening the youth movement and figuring out how we can be most impactful and be most effective.
So what stage is that Future U in? You're still imagining it, or are you teaching already? Where is that?
Yeah, so Future U is one of the pillars that we are in the planning stage of, more than the rollout stage. So we're still really working with adult-led organizations across the country who have created similar programs for adults and similar models for adults, and really working on adapting that curriculum and those materials to be applicable to young people. So yeah, we're still kind of working on that visioning and planning stage for that one.
How do you know when you're working on a social movement that you're doing the right thing? I'm interested in progressive social movements, but there are social movements on the other side that are directly opposed sometimes. There are lots of people who are anti-abortion who organize, or there's lots of people who have taken the other side. How do you know that what you're picking is right? And do you, like in your coalition, ever turn away somebody or some group because you don't feel like it's aligned with the future that you want?
So we, as of right now, are nonpartisan and work with young people as they come to us. And we actually haven't come across, surprisingly enough, a situation yet where we've had to sort of really ask ourselves with, you know, a concrete example, you know, is this something that we want to support? What we found is that young people are very determined to create change that is going to make our future just and safe for everyone. That is how we describe, you know, the future that we're fighting for. And I think, you know, not to say that all young people everywhere have the same opinion, which obviously is not true. That would be very interesting, but definitely not, you know, not the situation we're finding ourselves in. But I think for us, it's about meeting young people where they're at. And as I said, being really purposeful in supporting young people with their needs. So we're not really necessarily making decision of, oh, this is the direction that the movement needs to go in, or this is something that needs to happen or not happen. It's more that, you know, young people are saying we need this, or, you know, we're observing that young people are struggling with this topic or, you know, with this resource. And so we're saying, okay, how can we, as an organization that's connected to both these youth-led groups and kind of the adult world, bring in those adult resources to build up that youth capacity? And I think as far as when and if those organizations come to us that says, you know, oh, can we, you know, have that support and have that help, and they might not fit into that mission of creating that safe and just future, I think we will, you know, cross that bridge when we get there and figure out what does that look like, and how do we open that up to the broader youth movement and that broader conversation to really, you know, ask our community, you know, what should we do here? And really relying on our networks and our support system to figure out together kind of how we want to navigate those situations.
Well, and I also assume that if you marched from the Capitol to Paul Ryan in protest, and you have groups like Sunrise that are working on climate, there's going to be self-selection, that somebody who's on another side is probably not going to want to be part of this particular coalition.
I think maybe that's what's been happening as of so far. But I think, you know, the thing that I really like about the youth space, and I really am excited and what brings me a lot of hope within the next generation is it's not as polarizing as I think our country looks now and our world looks now. And it's not, you know, us versus them in the same way that I think it is for a lot of the adult spaces in kind of the social change movement. It's very, you know, our way or the highway. And I think young people are looking at this polarization that's been happening, the splitting that's been happening amongst the left and the right, and saying it's not that black and white. You know, it can't be this or that. You know, not everything is that black and white. And what we need to do is we need to have conversations. We need to have empathy. We need to develop those relationships and really listen to people, because that's what's going to bring about change and that's what's going to bring about understanding. It feels like at some times that we're living in a different country or a different world than, you know, someone who might be on that other side of that line if it was there. I think there is a lot and important to remember that this country belongs to all of us, and we as a collective, it is up to us what happens with it moving forward. And I think young people are in the mindset of, we want to make sure that we have, as I said before, have a safe and just place for everyone. And I think that doesn't just mean we want everyone that doesn't agree with us to go away, because it's not realistic. And what we need to do is listen and be open and empathetic and understanding, because that's what's going to forge, I think, the best path and the most authentic solutions for kind of the future.
When you mentioned 20 founding members, who are they? What makes up this youth space movement? And has it grown from those 20 since?
Yes, it has grown from those 20. We have over 30 organizations now, in counting. You know, when we first started, the organizations that we brought on board were the organizations that we knew about, like Sunrise, like March for Our Lives, like Zero Hour, those groups, along with some kind of statewide and local groups that were sort of within our network. But what we're trying to do now and be as kind of proactive and as purposeful about this as possible is really bringing in groups that are doing work on local levels and individuals who are doing work on local levels and statewide levels to make sure that, you know, those groups are being supported as well. Our theory of change is that it happens at a local level, and that, you know, it starts with those individuals and it starts with that community kind of based organizing. And so we want to, you know, really try as much as we can to support that work in the youth space and really be working with those groups. And then as far as what those groups are doing, it really ranges. We have some groups that are issue focused. We have a lot of gun violence prevention groups and a lot of climate groups. I think by far those are the two largest issues of our generation, as right now at least. But then we have other groups who are doing education reform, and groups who are just, you know, working on voter suppression, groups who are focused on, you know, the school to prison pipeline, groups that are focused on racial justice, LGBTQ equality, you know, all of those things. We have lots of different groups doing lots of different things, and it's really cool to watch everyone kind of come together and work together on various projects and support each other in what they're individually doing as well.
Collaboration through Future Coalition, what difference is that making for these organizations? Is that having impact?
I think that connective tissue that Future Coalition is offering and even just providing a space and sort of an invitation for groups to come together and work together is helping with the change that's made. And I think the other thing that we're offering that I am excited to watch as it develops, and we've been doing in the climate space for the last few months, and I'm excited to sort of see how it grows, is really providing a space for adult-led organizations who want to support what young people are doing but don't know how to, you know, talk with young people who are sort of on the front lines of that work, and really figuring out what are the ways that adult allies can support young people in a meaningful way, and where we can sort of come together intergenerationally and grow our impact that way.
Through this process, through this position, and through your various activism, you're gaining a lot of experience. You're gaining a lot of practice. You're obviously pretty good at articulating what you're up to and why. You talked about celebrity activists. How do you manage being a leader and not becoming too much a figurehead or a celebrity in a way that you don't approve of?
I'm very fortunate to have, especially a lot of adults that I work with who are, they watch out for me and are extremely supportive in what I'm doing and sort of are aware that I, you know, the way I do about celebrity activism and keeping me from going into that space. It's really about kind of remembering why you're doing what you're doing. for me, I struggle a lot with, you know, imposter syndrome and feeling, you know, oh, am I, you know, should I be in the role that I have? And, you know, instead of being more confident than me, a lot of times it makes me struggle to say, you know, how can I live up to that expectation, or how can I make sure that I'm, you know, as people put their, you know, dreams and ideas into me, can I make sure that I'm really upholding them? So it's something I struggle with. Again, I think it's about remembering why we're doing it and who we're doing it for. There's so many people with all different opinions on all sides. And I got a really good piece of advice from a youth activist once who told me, she was like, you know, don't listen to what anyone says, whether it's good or what it's bad. Focus on the people that you're doing the work for. And so that's what I try to do. It, you know, there are a lot of people that sing praises about Future Coalition and about the work that we're doing. And there's a lot of people who know, and a lot of people who say really negative things, and I just kind of not listen to either and focus on the fact that we're trying to build up the movement of young people and try to build up our capacity for change. And I think that we are. And so trying to continue down that path as much as we can is the best way to go forward with the theory of change we want to make, and doing it in an authentic and genuine way.
Obviously, what happens in elections locally and statewide and nationally has a lot of impact on policy changes that you and your groups want to see come to pass. What intersection is there between you and Future Coalition and your members in the electoral world?
We are obviously know that one of the largest things, especially as the youth bloc need to get out the vote in 2020 and in beyond, it was our goal looking at 2018 midterms, and with a lot of my local elections that are happening in 2019, we have groups doing work around. Overall in the youth space, people understand that no matter what we do, as much as we do, you know, getting young people to vote is going to be so important, because young people are a huge voting block that is not being utilized, and that young people aren't voting in numbers that are of comparison to other generations, and that needs to change. We're very focused on getting the youth vote out in 2020 and beyond, and really making sure that people understand that we can do all these different actions. We can march, we can walk out, we can strike, but if we aren't voting, change isn't going to be made in the way that we want it to.
Katie, is there a question that I should ask you that I have failed to so far?
The only thing that I always like to kind of express is, I think, the importance of youth voices and youth leaders. I talked about a little bit with the civil rights movement and the Sorority Revolution and all of the, you know, many social change movements that have happened where young people have played a key role. But I think it's important that we don't underestimate young people and their power, and that, you know, no matter where we are or what level we are or how involved we are in the kind of social change base in the country or the world, that we recognize the young people in our lives are very powerful change agents and have ideas and passion and drive to make a lot of really kind of radical change on many different levels. And so if you're in the position to support that, no matter how big or small or what that looks like, that you should, because young people are the ones that are going to kind of continue to drive our country and the world into a more innovative, a more sustainable, a more just future. And we need to support that work on all different levels.
Anything else you want to say?
I don't think so. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was Katie Ader with the Future Coalition. She's at www.futurecoalition.org. Coordination and shared learning are very important areas for youth-led organizations. I'm glad Future Coalition is providing a hub for these efforts. This is Nathaniel G. Perlman with the Great Battlefield Podcast. You can find us at resistancedashboard.com or by searching for Great Battlefield in places where podcasts are found.